and by the leadership of the Spirit that indwelt me. Is all this true? Well, it didn't take me long after I began to study it to be absolutely convinced that it was the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I became convinced that about 40 different men over a 1500 to 1600 year period could not possibly have put together a book that is so perfectly intertwined with no inconsistencies, bearing in mind they never knew each other, many of them. So once that was settled in my mind, and I knew it was the absolute inspired word of God, and doubt had been removed, and that was it, then I began to say, okay, now, let's begin to understand it. And that's been a very difficult process, and I'm still in the process of doing it. One of the first things I had to settle was, the Bible clearly teaches that right now, in this room, there are angels. And they're here, and they can see one another. They can communicate with one another. They hear everything I'm saying. They don't know what I'm thinking, but they can hear everything I'm saying, and they have known every one of you from the day of your birth. They're very real to one another. They're quite tangible to one another. I know the Bible teaches that. So after I look at the rest of the Bible, I say, okay, because I know the rest of the Bible is true, that has to be true. How can that be true? And I know that Jesus could apparently go through walls and suddenly appear behind closed doors twice to the disciples after his resurrection, appearing before them in a glorified body. And apparently that glorified body also had the power to disappear suddenly from view. If he was here now, suddenly disappeared. Well, how is that possible? Well, you can take the viewpoint, well, with God all things are possible, and that settles it. Okay, I agree. No problem. I agree with you 100%. If that's the way you want to look at it, I agree 100%. But I'm a curious fella, and I believe that God made all things. And how he made them is very interesting. Everything that you see around you here, everything you feel, the wood, the cushions, your hair, your eyes, the air you breathe, everything is made of atoms. Everything. But what's interesting about an atom is we've never really seen one. We've got pretty high-powered microscopes, but how do we know they exist? We learned it by experimenting with different ways they react with one another, and we know they have to be there. Even though we've never seen one, we know they're there because of the way they interact with one another. We also come to understand how they're put together. We know it has a nucleus. We know each atom has a nucleus. We know it has protons, and we know it has electrons going around it. If you take one atom and you take everything it's made up of, it's only about 5% of the total area it covers with those electrons floating around. So what's the rest of it? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. That's true with this wood. Even though it's tightly packed and they are closer together, it's true of the air here. So what does that mean? It means that 95% of what I'm looking at is nothing. Why can't the angels exist in the 95%? Why can't there be two dimensions? And why can't angels pass through wood? Why can't they go through doors? 95% of it are nothing. So I believe that the same God who made the universe made it where there are two different realms, two different dimensions, two different realms. I believe there's a realm on the outside of our flesh that's made up of angelic beings, a creation of God we cannot see, yet they can see us. I believe the angels watch us, and I believe one day we'll be over there in glorified body and we'll be watching the other people. In a moment you'll see why I'm telling you and why I'm express it to you what I believe about it. There's another thing that's important. In interpreting the book of Revelation, if you don't interpret it in the following manner, you're going to make a lot of gross errors. And I tried, before I began to look at it this way, and what I'm going to tell you is certainly not unscriptural, not unbiblical, it's not unprecedented. When John wrote the book of Revelation, on many occasions, John could see what was going on in the spiritual kingdom. At the same time, John could see what was going on in the physical kingdom. Just like an angel, he could see in both kingdoms. Right now, if I could see into the angelic kingdom, I would see angels all around here, and they would be quite real. And I could stand here and report to you what was going on in the angelic kingdom, and I could report what was going on in the physical kingdom. I could say Kenneth is bowing his head and saying yes. And heaven only knows what Bob Christ is doing, but I can see, and I know what you're doing. But if I could see into that angelic realm, I could tell you what they're doing too. I think that's what God did in the book of Revelation on many occasions. I think John saw what was going on in both kingdoms, and he reported it. Sometimes at the same time. Now, we're going to take a look at something that I came to last Wednesday night, having to do with the bottomless pit. And I went through it in great detail, talked about the bottomless pit, the smoke that came up out of the bottomless pit, discussed why it looked like it did, based on the way God made the earth. Now we're going to get to something that's a little harder to understand, unless you understand what I was talking about when I first started. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. Now you've never seen any locusts like these. John had to use something to describe them. He had to write this book to people that could understand what he was talking about. And the only thing John could think of that these creatures looked like were locusts. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and unto them was given power. I've seen locusts in Africa. Matter of fact, they're having a big plague of locusts right now over in eastern Africa, and it's destroying an awful lot of crops. And these things that John saw looked just like locusts. And they came out of the smoke. Now, locusts don't normally dwell in smoke. Smoke's not good for locusts. It usually kills them. But these weren't real locusts. They're fallen angels. And they came up out of the bottomless pit through the shaft abysses that we talked about last Wednesday night. And they came out upon the earth. And to them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. The scorpions of the earth have a terrific sting. I've never been stung by a scorpion, but I've known people who have. And it's an excruciating pain. It has even been known to kill people, but sometimes when people get stung by a scorpion, they wish they were dead because of the intensity of the pain. But these creatures come out, and John describes them, and they had tails likened to scorpions. Whatever these things were, their tails looked like a pointed scorpion's tail. There were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. Now, what I'm going to say now is not a conclusive proof, but it's what we call a deductive proof. I would say, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. I can't think of any reason for these creatures to stop tormenting men except the end of the tribulation period. Why would you have them do it for just 5 months? I can't think of any biblical perspective where you could say, well, 5 months is symbolic of this or that or so forth. So I can't think of anything. Haven't found anything. So I would say that indicated at this point in time, on the blowing of the fifth trumpet, when these creatures come out of the bottomless pit, the earth itself, the tribulation period has 5 months left to go in which time you will have the blowing of the sixth trumpet, the seventh trumpet, and seven vials of wrath. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit. That's Abyssu Priatos, Shaft Abyss. These creatures come up out of the earth, which is the bottomless pit, and they come up on the earth, and they have a king over them. Now, they've been there for a long time, but apparently they have never been let up on the earth before. We're going to discuss where they came from, and they've been kept there for a very long time for this purpose. We're going to discuss their history and their king, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. Apollyon and Abaddon, this is Hebrew, this is Greek, mean precisely and exactly the same thing, destroyer. These are destroyer angels. Some people have said, well, this is Satan. I don't think so. He's a king. He's an underling. But Satan is the emperor. He's the ruler. He's the god. And he has kings, lieutenants, captains, and generals underneath him. He has a lot of people underneath him in this spiritual kingdom. But this is one named Destroyer in both languages. Now, at one time, all the angels made by God followed God, including Lucifer himself. But finally, Lucifer decided that he would rebel against God. And for those of you who've attended here for a while, I've covered all that and discussed exactly what I thought the rebellion was and why he was cast out of heaven and why he became what we call Satan, the ruler of all the fallen angels. About a third of the angelic host chose to follow Satan, Lucifer, when he rebelled against God. And those angels made a choice. They were angels that decided they would follow Lucifer. They are forever sealed in that choice. There's no way back for them. They made their choice. Satan made his choice. He's sealed in it. When you made a choice to receive Christ as your Savior, it's an irreversible choice. I can't think of any reason anybody would want to reverse it, but it's an irreversible choice. You were forever sealed in that choice, and God now considers you his child for all eternity, and there is no way back. You have been passed from death unto life. But these are especially bad angels. These are angels that are super bad in that they have the ability to destroy. There are three realms of angels. The angels were placed under Lucifer, one of the archangels, under Michael, one of the archangels, and under Gabriel, one of the archangels. Now, Gabriel is a messenger angel. God created the angels. He made them for whatever purpose suited him. And not all angels are created precisely in the same way to accomplish the same ends. All of Gabriel's angels are messenger angels. They're angels that carry messages, that carry communications from God to men and to other angels. They're not tremendous fighters. They're not warrior angels. Oh, sure, they have tremendous spiritual power, but they are not the most powerful of the angels. They're created to carry messages and to communicate between themselves and man. And then there were Satan's angels. God originally placed Lucifer, who became Satan, over all of creation, the entire universe, Mars, Venus, Jupiter, Uranus, the whole galaxy, all of creation. God put Lucifer over it. And it was Lucifer's responsibility. And Lucifer had angels that God created. And they were angels that were created to oversee the creation and to do the things that are necessary for the maintenance of the universe. But when Lucifer fell, Lucifer became a fallen angel. The other, the type of angels that you'll find today, fallen angels, that are from Lucifer's realm, they're the ones who have a pre-anxiety to destroy man. They're angels that try to hurt man. They're angels that try to cause them to hurt themselves, to commit suicide, to leave the earth in depression, to try to do them to perform criminal acts. They're extremely influential angels, and they're fallen angels from Lucifer's realm. And then we come to the last realm of angels under Michael. They are the warrior angels. They are destroyer angels. They are mighty angels. Angels that have the ability to war, tremendous, unbelievable power to devastate. When Lucifer fell, there were some that fell with him from his own realm that chose to follow him. There were some that fell from Gabriel's realm and chose to follow him. And there were some that fell from Michael's realm. You'll find an example of the one that fell from Gabriel's realm in the little girl that followed Paul around Philippi. She followed Paul and Silas. And she was possessed with a spirit from a fallen angel that had been a part of Gabriel's realm. Why do I say that? Gabriel's angels carried messengers. They were communicators. They were built for that purpose. They were made for that purpose by God. Even though this fallen angel that possessed her was fallen, he still tried to do what he was designed to do. He followed Paul and Silas all over Philippi. And here is what the little girl said, the fallen angel in her. "These are the servants of the Most High God, who declare unto you the way of salvation. Hear ye them." Then she would say it over and 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 over. "These are the servants of the Most High God, who declare unto you the way of salvation. Hear ye them." That doesn't seem like too bad a thing, does it? Finally, Paul could take no more of it, and he turned around, and he cast out the fallen angel. And the little girl was made whole again. Her masters didn't like it one bit, because she was able to tell prophetic things. She was able to tell who was going to win races and to who was going to win in bets and gambling, because they do have that limited power for a short period of time to foretell the future. And then if you want an example of the fallen angel from Gabriel's realm, look at the Gadara demoniac. The Gadara demoniac was rushing about, possessed of one of the fallen angels from Lucifer's realm, Satan's realm, and he was trying to kill himself with rocks and stones. And he ran about the tombs, having a preoccupation with dead bodies. He had a preoccupation with the destruction of physical things. The very thing he was placed over to superintend, the very thing he was supposed to look over, creation. He was determined to destroy it. He was possessed with a legion, fallen angels. Those were from Satan's realm. Now, what about Michael's realm? You don't find it in the Bible. So what happened to those angels? Those are these angels right here. And they're destroyer angels. And they have not been allowed on the earth because they would literally destroy man. And so God has kept them separate in a quite different place called Tartarus. And they will not be unleashed until this particular time in the tribulation period when the fifth trumpet is blown. Jude talks about them here. Jude 6. "And the angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation." These were angels that left their first habitation in heaven. I'm convinced they were Michael's archangels. "He hath preserved an everlasting chains under darkness." Now, sometimes when you see this word everlasting, you have to see if it's qualified. In this case, it is qualified. "Preserved an everlasting chains," for how long? Under darkness in Tartarus until the judgment of the great day. The judgment of the great day are the pouring out of God's vials of wrath on the earth. And on the blowing of the fifth trumpet, these chains are loosed, and these angels come to the surface And they are those horrifying locusts that are seen. Now, let's take a look at some of Satan's demonic fallen angels. And it's an interesting discourse. Luke 8:30. And Jesus asked him, saying, "What is thy name?" And he's talking to the Gadara demoniac. This is the one that ran through the tombs, was trying to destroy anything that was material. And he said, "Legion," because many devils were entered into him. These fallen angels are called demons, or devils. They've had that name since they fell and chose to follow Satan. And they besought him that he would not command them to go out into the deep. This is a very important word here. It's abisu. That's the God-breathed inspired word, abisu. That's abisu. Translated bottomless here, translated deep here. What they're asking him is this: please do not send us down there into the bottomless pit with those other destroyer angels. They had no desire to go down with any of the fallen angels from Michael's realm. Because that's what this word means. And many people have taken this to mean the Sea of Galilee, but it doesn't. And I'll show you why in a moment. And there was an herd of many swine feeding on the mountain. And they besought him that he would suffer them to enter into them, and he suffered them. He allowed it. So they came out of the Gadara demoniac, and they went into the swine. And immediately after they went after the swine, then went the devils out of the man and entered into the swine. And the herd ran violently down a steep place into the lake. This God-breathed word for lake is limnane. This word is abisu. Quite different word. They said, "Please don't send us down into the abyss." And he didn't. He sent them into the lake where the swine perished and were choked. Now, a lot of people think we Christians are crazy, but you can't just take part of the Bible. You've got to take all of it. Since I know it's inspired, I have to take everything it says, even though I can't understand it. But I think there's some things we can understand where people think we're crazy for believing that way. They have discovered a new continent down in the center of the earth. It's about 200 miles across. It's about 80 miles deep. There are lots of different pockets underneath the earth where it's not all that hot, where you don't have that liquid rock flowing all over the place, and where I suppose it might be quite comfortable. The interior of the earth, by and large, is a great underground lake of red-hot flowing liquid rock called magma. But in some places under the crust, you don't have that magma flowing. You have hollowed caverns. Now, according to the parable of Lazarus and the rich man, the rich man descended into hell. Now, there's a word for hell called Gehenna, and it means the burning hell. It's translated H-E-L-L, hell. The problem is there's another word called Hades, which means the underworld. And they're two quite different places. Hades is the underworld, and until Jesus came and paid the price for all of men's sins on the cross, this place, Hades, the underworld, was called Abraham's bosom. But once Jesus came, shed his blood on the cross, then all of these saints were released. Once the blood was shed, they had looked forward to it and had believed Messiah was coming. And they were freed and carried into heaven, where their souls remain until this day, saved by the same blood that saved my soul. And this place called Abraham's bosom ended at the cross. It is now empty. Hell is still very much down there. This is Gehenna, translated hell. This is Hades. It's also translated hell. Unfortunately, this is also translated hell. Tartarus. Three quite different words. Hades is not such a bad place. No fire there. It was a place where the Old Testament saints, the saved, were kept until the actual blood that they had looked forward to the Messiah coming, until it was shed, they were kept there, with rare exception being Moses, Elijah, and Enoch. But they were kept here, their souls, and then they were set free when Messiah made the sacrifice that set them free. All the souls that went to hell are still there. And down here in Tartarus, also translated hell, it's the prison of the fallen angels. You'll find them in Jude, and you'll find them in Peter, and that's who I believe these are. I believe these things that look like locusts are what you would call a distorted, depraved appearance of an angel that had fallen from God's grace when they made their choice. I believe they're angels from Michael's realm, and I believe they come upon the earth and wreak havoc. Now, I want to show you something which was one of the gods of the Assyrian and Babylonian empires, which were literally riddled with demonic spirits, witches, teaching of demons, wizardry, all sorts of ungodly practices of the spirit world. This is their demon god, Pazuzu. And Pazuzu is an interesting character. Pazuzu has a crown on his head. He wears a crown. He has a face like a man. Part of this has been broken off, but he has a face like a man. And there were once teeth in here that were sharp teeth like that of an animal. He has four wings like a locust. He has a breastplate that's armored. His whole body looks like it's armored, like you would picture a knight or a horse being covered with armor during the time of the Crusades or the Knights of the Round Table. He has long hair. Comes down all the way under his chin. Has a long tail like a scorpion. He has long hair that comes down his back. So he's got a crown, a face like a man, teeth like an animal, wings. He's got a tail like a scorpion. And that's the demon god, Pazuzu. I think that's basically what John saw. Now remember, he's looking into the spirit realm. At the same time, he's looking at what's happening to people. In other words, if those creatures were suddenly unleashed right now, he'd be able to see me standing here, you sitting there, and he'd see these creatures coming out, and he'd see them attacking us. That's not going to happen to us, but it is going to happen to some lost people. And there came out a smoke locust upon the earth, and to them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. This is the demon god Pazuzu. So let's take a look at it. And the shapes of the locusts were like horses prepared into battle. They had armor. And on their heads were, as it were, crowns of gold. And their faces were as the faces of men. And they had hair as the hair of a woman, long hair. And their teeth were as the teeth of lions. Those teeth have been broken out because it's a clay figurine. And they had breastplates, as it were, breastplates of iron. See the breastplate. And the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle. I think they looked just about like the demon god Pazuzu, and I think John described them. And they had tails likened to scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. I believe when this happened, we have 5 months left to go in the tribulation period. I believe that all the saved will be raptured out on the seventh trumpet, and I still think we'll be here through part of this. But they won't hurt us. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. I'm convinced that these creatures are going to come up out of the bottomless pit. I'm convinced they're going to come up on this earth, out of Tartarus, and torment men for 5 months, just like the Bible says. Now, here's something that I'm quite confident on. I don't think the people that they're hurting will see them, but I certainly think they'll feel them. I certainly think they'll feel tremendous stings in different parts of their body, agonizing pain. Perhaps the type even that morphine won't help all that much. I think they're going to be stinging and hurting. Those who rejected Christ for 5 months, I doubt if those people will see these creatures. These creatures are very real. They'll see one another. But I doubt if these people will know what's stinging them, except they will understand it's a punishment from God, even though they probably won't see the creatures that are causing it. This is, well, I'll just skip that one because I do want to finish this other part here. This is the last sheet, so I'd like to get through with it. I've talked a great deal about this bottomless pit, how the earth is constructed. It's very real and it's very genuine. So with that in mind, I want you to notice something that Moses said would happen in the latter days. According to Moses, in the latter days, God will kindle a fire in the earth that will burn down into the pit of the lowest hell in the earth. He's going to generate a fire that will burn down to the lowest hell. The fire will come up from the earth to burn the increase, the crops of the earth, causing mankind to be burned outwardly with fire and inwardly with hunger. God will consume, melt the edges of the tectonic crustal plate structures, foundations, upon which the mountain set. God will shower his volcanic arrows of fire destruction upon sinful mankind. Do I think Moses knew anything about tectonic plates? No, absolutely not. Do I think God did? He should. He formed them. He owns, operates, and controls them. And I believe he had Moses write this, because it's a description of what's going to happen when hell breaks loose on the earth. And the remarkable thing is, it's not too far away. Here's where he wrote it and said it would happen in the latter days. Gather unto me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears and call heaven and earth to record against them. He said, children of Israel, God has something he wants to say to you pertaining to your conduct, your future generation, and the latter time. He says, for I know that after my death you will utterly corrupt yourselves. And they did. They crucified their Messiah. This was written thousands of years ago. And turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days. Then he begins to talk about this evil that's going to befall them in the latter days. Because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. And certainly Israel has, and we are not far behind. The Song of Moses, verse 30, Deuteronomy 31, 28, 29, now 30. And Moses spake in the ears of all the congregation of Israel the words of this song until they were ended. He tells them what's going to happen to them in the latter days when they fall away from God. For a fire is kindled in mine anger, and shall burn into the lowest hell, and shall consume the earth with her increase, all of her crops, and set on fire foundations of the mountains. And those tectonic plates are the foundations upon which all the mountains and islands set. I will heap mischiefs upon them. I will spend mine arrows upon them. They shall be burnt with hunger and devoured with burning heat and with bitter destruction. This was spoken to the nation of Israel wandering in the wilderness. Although the destruction predicted by Moses is for the nation of Israel, according to Luke, it will also affect the rest of the planet. Luke 17, 29. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be, fire and brimstone from heaven. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Psalm 11, the psalmist writes at this very same time, upon the wicked he shall rain snares, fire and brimstone, and a horrible tempest. This shall be the portion of their cup. I'm very thankful for my salvation. But I'm also very thankful that I will not be here when God's wrath is poured out. And I suppose of all the things that I'm thankful for after my salvation was understanding what I'm escaping by the mercy of God in Christ Jesus and having the Word. Suppose at age 72 I had never received Christ. Suppose now I had gone on to Kansas City and Imogene and I would be there and just Molly and me, baby makes three, we're happy in our blue heaven. I would have retired from the National Weather Service. I would be well off, nice big home. And all this, when it came, I would have no idea what was happening. I thank God I've been saved. I thank God I've been scripturally baptized. And I thank God that I'm a member of one of his churches. And I thank God for this information. One thing is for certain. This is going to happen. Am I certain that I've got everything I told you just 100% correct? No, I'm not. But even if I'm a little bit off, what is all this? It's certainly horrible, to say the least. If you don't know the Lord as your Savior, you need to do some serious thinking about it, because Jesus is the only one who can save you from eternal damnation in hell. He's the only one who can give you strength and courage and whatever it takes to get through this, at least part of it. And he's the only one who can preserve your life in his presence for all eternity. I hope you'll think about those things. If you're not a member of one of the Lord's churches, I hope you'll really think about that. You need to be. Because Jesus died for the church, and Jesus taught the church for more than 3.5 years. Something you really ought to think about. And it is now 8:00.